What's going on, everybody? Patrick Berry here, and we are back again for another Microsode edition of Flame On. I'm being joined today by Eric.
Hello.
And quite possibly the person you will hear the most throughout this entire episode, BJ, is here with us as well.
She's Beauty and she's Grace, and she'll probably eat your face.
And he's Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Ken. I can't wait to talk about that movie on here. I cannot wait.
Dear God. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. Let's not.
There's so many. Beach each other off.
We're not here to beach off each other.
You want to beach off right now? I'll beach off right now.
Listen. Jesus Christ. The number, literally, we probably could do a microsode just on the trailers and things that have come out in the last week. From Secret Invasion to Blue Beetle to Barbie. There's just so much stuff coming up in the next, I don't even know how many months that is just going to be. We're going to have to do some, mega roundups, because with all this stuff coming out, we're just not gonna be able to do one topic each. We're gonna have to dive in, so that way it's not like this topic where it's 17 months later and we're finally getting around to talking about it.
I just like how the person we were kind of waiting to see the movie was like, oh yeah, I'm not gonna be able to make it, and I was like, son of a bitch, I have been sitting on a fucking folder of I've been sitting on a folder of just things I want to say about this movie and just how it affects the overall MCU and everything. And I've been a crazy person just adding to it every month, just being like, oh yeah, that's a link. Oh yeah, like that. And so now I'm just that one crazy dude from Always Sunny in Philadelphia with his hands on the wall, like, it's aliens. It's always been aliens. Like, a weirdo. So no, the longer we wait, the worse it was going to be.
Oh Lord. Well, if the title of this episode, if you just happened to stumble upon listening to this episode and didn't click on it, so you didn't see the title beforehand, because that'll happen. I know that happens when I listen in my car to Stitcher on the new episodes. It happened. I was listening to, what did I listen to? I think it was a Race Chaser episode. And then we were next in the new episodes list. And I was like, oh my God, it's our theme music. Why am I listening to us? I don't listen to us. I have enough time listening to us when we record and then when I edit it. Okay, I don't need a third time around. And that's why the editing has gone down to not as much as it used to be, because I can only take listening to myself for so long before I go crazy. So thank you to everybody that puts up with listening to me out there, because I appreciate you the most. But we're here to finally head back to the kingdom, the nation, the paradise that is Wakanda with Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. If you need a bit of a recap on what that is, it is a 2022 American superhero film based on Marvel Comics featuring the character Shuri / in this case, spoiler alert, Black Panther. It's produced by Marvel Studios and distributed by Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures. It is a sequel to Black Panther from 2018, and it is the 30th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Directed by Ryan Coogler, who co-wrote the screenplay with Joe Robert Cole, the film stars Letitia Wright as Shuri, alongside Lupita Nyong'o, I'm going to fuck up everybody's names, and I'm going to be so mad at myself. Is it Danny or Deni?
Who did they play?
Oh, God. Now you're trying to make... Listen, I just have names here. This didn't...
Danny Sapan? Sapana?
No.
Deni Gurira. Gurira. Okoye.
Oh, yeah, Deni Gurira. If that one is difficult even for me.
Okay, see, we're all fucking it up, so I don't think that's bad anymore.
And that'll be the one celebrity from this entire thing that we all three of us will run into one day, and she'll be like, y'all are the ones. y'all are the ones. And she's going to look at me the most being like, you should have set them straight. You should have set them straight. This is on you.
Here you go. Winston Duke, Florence Kazumba, Dominique Thorne, Michaela Cole, Mabel Cadena, Tenoch Huerta, Martin Freeman, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Angela Bassett doing the thing. In the film, the leaders of Wakanda fight to protect their nation in the wake of King T'Challa's death. All right, so if you've listened to our reviews before, mostly in the microsode form, we usually will do kind of a round of what do we like. We'll do a round of things that maybe didn't impress us as much, or maybe some things we would have done to improve the film, and then speculation on where this heads to from here. I think we should kind of maybe flip it around a little bit, or switch up the format a little bit, I'll say, because I know BJ has so much that he wants to talk about with this. It's been quite a while since I've seen the film. So a lot of it's really just like kind of the things that have imprinted the most on me. But what I want to do is kind of throw the ball into BJ's court and have him kind of guide us through thoughts and feelings. And Eric and I will chime in, pitch in our commentary, and just have a kind of a free flowing discussion about Black Panther Wakanda Forever and go from there. So BJ, take it away.
So let me set up my PowerPoint presentation and my dissertation and get my thesis ready.
Can you turn on the overhead projector, please? Let's get the yeah. Oh my god, I can't remember what the translucent pages were called. I know they had a name.
Oh my god. But also let me go into the bathroom and look in the mirror at my memento tattoos that I made of this movie as well. Because this movie did the absolute fucking most. Like, I'm not even gonna lie. Like, I was nervous going into it, because I was like, it was a weird, like, I understand the choice not to recast Chadwick Boseman. Like, I completely understand it. If Black superhero movies hadn't been so rare and successful as Black Panther was, and the fact that, like, you know, he did the damn thing, had it not been that, I feel like they would have easily recasted him and just blamed it on the blip or something. However,
not even said anything, because I mean, Rhodey. Mm-hmm. Rhodey went from, you know, Rhodey was two different people over the course of two movies, essentially back to back.
Oh, same for Bruce Banner.
Very true.
So it was one of those things where I think just because of the culture and everything, and especially the way the movie industry is with movies primarily made of people of color and everything, it's one of those things where they had to honor him in a way in universe, outside of just like having a like vigil. But holy fucking shit, did they come out swinging in this movie? Because I don't think we've had a Marvel movie. I think WandaVision, the next to last episode of WandaVision made me weep. But this one made me weep, and then it was like, "Oh, are you good? Are you sad? Are you feeling better now?" And then it just kicked me in the nuts afterwards, in a good way, because that opening scene where you get to see like how like the thing I love about the Black Panther mythos within the MCU is that they do a really good job of building up Wakanda and showing kind of world views within Wakanda. And how it affects the outside world. They did a really good. They knocked it out of the park again with kind of the universe building, and it was a tight ensemble. Like it was a large cast, but the story itself felt so contained. It felt almost small. Honestly, had they not had any of the Contessa and any of the parts that took place in the U.S. this would have felt like a very self-contained movie, and I was worried about them adding in those like universe building parts, because I thought they would feel kind of disjointed, but no, I actually found myself enjoying it. But yeah, so I'll kind of go with the same format, because I, as much as I want to jump right into my wild conjecture phase, because I'm a crazy person right now. But no, I absolutely love the heart and feel of this movie. Cause at the end of the day, this movie was 100% about Shuri. It touched on all of the big characters in Wakanda. Like Ramonda, it touched, especially Okoye. It touched on a lot of them, but I gotta say, Shuri, she went through it. And in the comics, she goes through it. So this was a perfect opportunity to kind of catapult her character forward. And I actually love that they didn't shy away from the fact that she's like, I'm gonna kill this bitch. Like, she's like, absolutely. Because that part, when I was in the theater, because this was a theater experience. When I was in the theater, sure. The part where she goes to the ancestral lands, not even to get power. And I love that. She did not want to go to the ancestral lands to get power. She wanted to go see her family. And my thing is that is such a touch on grief. And when you lose that many people that quickly, of how you just kind of romanticize seeing them again, in any way, shape or form. So, and then she did see her family. She saw Eric, and that was, this girl next to me goes, oh, fucking no, he did not show up in the ancestral plane. This woman next to me is like, this son of a bitch. She's got to see this bitch. But then the whole thing where he's like, we're the same. You and I are alike. And that, like, and you can see it in her Black Panther suit. She's got the gold accents. But gold. She's, all of her accents are gold. And I was like, so I loved that, her whole journey, her entire journey through the entire movie. And then, like, the whole thing where she goes to Telecon and she's like, these people are going through the same thing we went through before T'Challa outed us. So it's a really good, between her and Namor, like, because Namor is 100% ready to just murder. She was on the cusp and she finally made a decision. She made the better decision, question mark. But what did you guys think of, like, your favorite parts of the movie? Because I pretty much almost loved everything.
Everything with Angela Bassett.
Ugh.
Was just,
did the damn thing,
chewed up every bit of that scene. Oh, yes. Chewed it up, left no crumbs, like the children out there say, she ate.
She did. Let's see. I liked the design of Namor's kingdom. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like the backstory they gave us for him. I almost didn't need any of the U.S. stuff. I understand that they wanted to introduce Riri. So they kind of had to go there. And the U.S., of course, had to be the bad guy to kick off the whole conflict between...
They're a fucking problem. And, like, oh, absolutely. They were a fucking problem from the beginning of this movie.
What, the U.S. is the villain? Are we the drama?
I don't think we're the drama.
Stealing technology from college students. That's completely fine. Wanting all the vibranium for us. We need it. We're so poor. We need it. We absolutely need it.
I mean, even though I'm happy to get Cassandra in the movies as well as in just the TV shows, but I it kind of loaded the movie a little bit in parts.
I like how we got, like, my thing is, she was kind of, the thing I like about her in this movie and us getting to spend more time with her. I didn't really have a scope of how much of a problem she is until she was like, oh yeah, we hacked the beads. And I'm like, what do you mean you hacked? America? America hacked the fucking beads? I was like
America, oh. Explain.
Oh no. America, I was explain. Like, I was like, oh no, no. They can't be privy to that technology. This is bad. So that was a nice surprise that we actually got. Because you don't really, all you know is she's sneaky. And like especially with the end of Black Widow and going into Hawkeye, you're like, this bitch put a hit out on an Avenger. And like, no fucking qualms about it. She was like, yeah. I'm pretty sure he killed your sister. Like, you should go kill him. Like, she has no problem at all. So I'm like, I like that. I like the fact that made kind of the American scenes worth it to me. A little bit.
And she's just phenomenal, period. Julia Louis-Dreyfus as Val is just, yeah. I, no matter what she's been in so far, it's been a highlight for me. You know, and yeah, I can see where you guys are coming from, where it borders on a little bit of bloat. I'm not going to get into the part where I think was a little bit more bloat per se just yet, because we're still in the fun stuff, but absolutely fun was that opening scene, the funeral procession or the celebration procession, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. through the streets of Wakanda, and by fun I mean absolutely heart-wrenching. But not just that, because yes, that tugged on all the heartstrings, that put you into such a headspace. But then to go into the silent purple memorial Marvel logo, mm-hmm. that featured Chadwick Boseman's like greatest moments as T'Challa in the MCU. They said, bitch, if you don't cry right now, you have absolutely no soul. Because I'm pretty sure BJ cried, and we've always questioned whether or not there was.
my soul that I keep in this little pocket dimension inside the ether that I don't ever let come out. I can hear it screaming at all times, but it doesn't affect me. Like, I let it out. I was like, you need to see this. You need to see this. And it was, it was funny because I was sitting in the theater and I was getting ready, and I was like, why do I feel like right before that one scene in WandaVision where Vision's like, grief is love persevering. And I was like, oh no. Oh, here it comes. I'm like not even. And it was funny because I love the way they depict. It's actually like New Orleans, where they have like the funeral procession and they're playing music, and you go to a wake, and like all the wakes I've been to, at least like with friends of the family and everything, they're like parties. Like, you're celebrating this person. And it was like everybody in Wakanda was celebrating T'Challa, and they're going to live their lives for him and have fun. But the one person throughout that entire scene was Shuri, just stony, not celebrating. And then when she had to do it again, it just deepened it. Like, everybody's doing the, and I'm like, the amount of strength you have to have to be able to celebrate two funerals in under a month. Like, I just, it was, but just the fact that,
I mean, I'm not going to discount the time frame, but it's a year.
Oh, is it a year?
Yes, because Ramonda takes her to the beach, and it's like, it's a year from that. So almost exactly a year after having to say goodbye to her brother,
she has to do it again
for her mother.
Yeah. She's got to do it for her mother. And she still didn't burn her brother's funeral. That, yeah.
She basically put them back on and had to go through all of that again, which made that piece at the end really kind of just hit even harder, because
there's been
so much grief. Yeah. And that's one thing.
Dying.
Phase four, you know, there's a couple of different kind of themes that have gone through everything, but grief has been a huge factor in what we've been seeing. Obviously, WandaVision, you know, you've mentioned it a couple of times, but dealing with and processing grief. And that was kind of the joke. I know we've said it, and I know I saw it online, but it's like, you know, wouldn't it be kind of wonky if grief was really the villain of WandaVision and not Mephisto? And it's like, oh,
it is.
No, it actually is. they went that way with it. But then we saw it run through so many different things, and then kind of, I don't want to say religion, but religion, spirituality, the afterlife, like all of those pieces started to then become a part of what we're getting as well, because then you have Moon Knight and the Duat.
Yeah, the Moon Knight 100% just was like, here's your fucking card. But like, No Way Home, Peter lost everything. He lost his history. Loki sitting in that room, getting to watch his entire life. He literally got to see what his life would have been, and he even got to see his brother's forgiveness. And then he's like, the variant that he is, he can't be a part of that anymore. So like, that's one of the things they approached in one of the episodes of Loki. Even Doctor Strange, they hammered us over the head with it, but you had America, like, her inability to use her powers stemmed from the fact that she lost her moms. She doesn't know where they are. She doesn't know if they're dead or alive, and they're just gone. And then you've got Doctor Strange with the fact that he gets to not really mourn, but he gets the idea that he did lose out on a relationship with what's her name. So it's like, the Ant-Man Quantumania, there's this prevalence thing in the trailer where they're talking about he lost time with Cassie.
In that movie, it's both focused on his lost time and also Janet's lost time with Hope.
Exactly. So there's been this layer of loss. There's been such a layer of loss and grief processing in the MCU right now, which I love as a story, like as like a writing focal point. It's a great motivation. Like Thor Love and Thunder, even though that thing was just all types of off the rails, him missing out on the relationship with Janet. And then you've got Gore dealing with his daughter's death in the most toxic way he can think of, which I don't blame him for. I'm like, me murder them.
It's also a religious thing. Uh-huh. It's that there is that combination, because it's like, oh, we've prayed to, we have worshipped you, we have given to you, for you, and then you just kind of mock us and you know. Yeah, I still stand by enjoying Love and Thunder. I know a lot of people don't like the movie.
Oh no, it was fun as hell, and I've been wanting. That's probably when I'm on my rewatch list. Once I'm on my fourth deployment in Puerto Rico, and I've done all the things, and I'm going to be sitting in my hotel room, being like, "What do I want to watch just to feel good?" But now that you mentioned the religious thing, that takes us all the way into Telecon with Namor. And this whole, he loves his people, and that is the only real expression of love he is capable of. Like, it's like they revere him as a god, and that removes you, because that's a story beat that DC does well, is that whole thing where Superman believes he has to live with people. He has to, because the thing is, he's revered by some people. He's got the power of a god. When you're viewed as a god, there's a chunk of you that's removed. And whereas Shuri has existed with her people and been with her people, and the tragedy took her out of like their traditions and a lot of the things, she threw herself into science. Namor, his people pretty much raised him up to the point to where he is, I don't want to say he's emotionally removed, but at the same time, it's like him and Shuri are two sides of the same coin, but the fact that his people revere him as a god, I don't know. There's something off about Namor, and I know there's a better way of saying it, but like
it's an emotional detachment.
Yeah, he can go from like stroking his people's faces and telling him he loves them more, to literally looking at Ramona and being like, I'm going to murder you and everyone you love. Like, it's love, but it's also like a weird twisted version of it. Like, I'm willing to do horrible things to keep these people safe and I don't give a fuck. Like, and I appreciate that about the character, because that's the thing, is Namor in the comics comes off as kind of very cocky. He's powerful and he's been raised as a god, so naturally he comes off cocky, but this version of him comes off as like, yes, I'm a god and I will love all of you and I will murder every man, woman, and child outside of this place for you. And you're like, I like you and I understand. I understand how you're the way you are, but it still makes me feel very afraid of you. So the fact that he backed down when Shuri kind of told him, like, we will protect your oceans, we will hide your kingdom, like, let's stop this nonsense. And yeah,
when she spared his life, and it, mm-hmm. it showed the compassion, which I still feel was very quick, but yeah, when she showed compassion, it showed him that she was worthy of his trust. So he then called and, you know, called his people to step down from, or to back down from the fight that they would have won. You know, they may mm-hmm. have at the end, had Shuri taken him out, they may have lost their god, but they would have won the war at yeah. that point, because mm-hmm. the Wakandans were not in a good place at that point.
No, no. And it's, and that is definitely I loved Namor. Like, he, like, again, chewing every scene. Like, I mean, it didn't hurt that they actually made him excessively attractive, and I need them to take it easy, because if I go into one more Black Panther anything and there's that many hot people on screen, I'ma just die. I'ma just melt in the chair and just be like, well, this is the end. My heart can't take it.
Well, I mean, anytime Winston Duke's on screen, it's very hard for me to concentrate on anything right? else that's going on.
Right? Oh, so I was going to say, how do you guys feel about M'Baku in this movie? Because the last movie, he felt like kind of anti-hero. I love that scene with him and Shuri in the woods. And
I was going to say, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. It's very much a... One of the things that I loved about this was, in essence, the supporting cast, mm-hmm. which in a lot of ways I felt that the supporting cast weren't necessarily supporting. They were as much a part of the story as the main focal figures of Namor and Shuri. In Shuri, like, that, the big brotherness, that role that he took over for, with T'Challa not being there, and kind of being that person to not scold or tell Shuri how to feel, mm-hmm. but to be there to gently nudge her to make those decisions, to find the answers herself, because we've all been there. We've all gone through grief. We've all dealt with emotional pieces where it's very much like, when you're crying and somebody tells you stop crying, or like if you're a child and somebody yells at you, stop crying, you know, you shouldn't be crying. What does that make you do? Like, you just kind of go in the complete opposite direction. You cry harder. So to have somebody there that was so supportive of her and just kind of being that sounding board and that gentle guide, I thought was amazing. I think they did a great job with M'Baku in this film, for sure.
So, okay. So, I mean, we are very eloquent tonight. I'm just enjoying, we're very
eloquent. We're on our game today.
We are some eloquent bitches.
And I'll say this, just to keep on the supporting cast role, Okoye and Nakia were two of my favorite pieces of this film. And there's a little part of me that really kind of wished that Nakia had taken over as the head of the kingdom. Like, I don't know how they would have really kind of said it or made it happen, but there is such a piece of it, and I understand, obviously, spoiler alert, in the middle of the movie, but we have a tiny Prince T'Challa now because Nakia was pregnant before the blip and then through all of this. So she left the country. She went to kind of start a life away from everybody, and T'Challa knew, and you know, everybody knew except Shuri. They really kept that secret from her. And there was just something about her presence, and like, these are all just some badass women, and it just, goddamn, they all just did such an amazing job in this film. Like,
yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah,
the acting for all of them was amazing, and I liked that they gave each cast member, they didn't rely on one person to take over for Chadwick. They really wanted to spread it out so everybody could kind of fill in his space in a way to let, for like the actors themselves to act and work through their grief that way, but also just to be there to help lift up the movie. But there were a lot of ideas introduced into this movie, and they did a lot of Wakandan world building.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of ideas came out. Like, the whole Midnight Angel stuff was like, I mean, oh my goodness, you're throwing everything at me all at once, because that, on top of Riri, on top of everything everywhere, like it was a lot
all at once.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, like, and then like, and I was gonna say, what is, real quickly, what was the weakest points for you guys? Because for me, I honestly had reservations on the fact that it went from a series to a movie. I liked that I got the movie, and the movie ended up being way better than what I was kind of expecting. But I was kind of enjoying the idea, because I think with the series, the original plan was, the series before Chadwick Boseman died, the series was supposed to be on everybody else. And the movie was supposed to be about Chadwick. And what's funny is the original plot was the exact same plot, except it was Chadwick. It was T'Challa trying to step back into being a ruler, that now that his kingdom has existed for 5 years without him, and then you have Namor show up, and there was supposed to be a lot of flashbacks of him thinking about Killmonger and how Killmonger would have reacted to these sort of situations. Because let's be clear, again, he was correct. They are like, the world is coming for Wakanda. The U.S. has made it very obvious. They would, like, with Ramonda's speech at the UN, she's like, they're coming for you. They're coming for all your stuff. America's going to America. The rest of the world is going to do what they couldn't do to you before and colonize you. And that was originally going to be more of the focal point if Chadwick Boseman hadn't passed away. But I like how they just kind of took that part out directly and kind of moved it more into a grief sort of storyline about all the other characters. So I had reservations on it being a movie, because it can't, it this one is stuffed to maximum and only going over a little bit. I feel like if it had been a series, they could have stuffed it as much as they wanted and not kind of gone over. But like I said, I think they were as efficient as they possibly could have been with what they wanted to put into the movie.
Honestly, that's the first time hearing about that there was a planned series for
same
everything.
No, it was originally announced as a series, and then it got tabled because right now they're stepping back from doing a lot more series. They're only going to be, I think, like three next year. And they, because I think Armor Wars was also supposed to be a series too, and I think that one also got put up as a movie.
Wait, so which series are you talking about? Are you talking about Ironheart?
No, so Ironheart was supposed to be a series. And then they were going to do a Wakanda Forever series, and they were going to do a Black Panther 2. But they
got, I never knew about the Wakanda Forever series.
Yeah, they were they were talking about doing a Wakanda Forever series and a Iron. I know they were supposed to do an Ironheart series. A Wakanda Forever series was on the table, and then when Chadwick Boseman died, all of those plans got switched around and moved around. So I was like, because I was very excited for like not just one moment of blackness, but like blackness across the ages, like just spread all that shit out everywhere. But I, like I said, I think they did. They didn't pull a Rise of the Skywalker and scrap the entire movie. I think they learned their lesson with that, because that was not the movie they were originally supposed to do for Star Wars. It's called Duel of Fates. You can look it up on Reddit. If anybody listening is curious about it, it is amazing. And I weep forever that that's not the final Star Wars movie we got from that trilogy. It would have been amazing. But yeah, no, I was hoping they would do kind of spread out a lot of the Wakanda stuff a little bit more, but like I said, with Chadwick Boseman dying, plans had to get scrapped, things had to get moved around, schedules had to change. So that was really my only down part. Is I just, again, my only down part is I wanted more. I always want more. I'm greedy. But were there any parts that you guys were kind of like, meh?
I hate to say this, but I did not. I felt like Riri's inclusion in this film served no purpose. I liked Riri. I thought that there were parts of the film that were great, that like the fight on the bridge.
Oh yeah.
That, I mean, it didn't necessarily include Riri, but it was because of them going to get Riri is why it happened. And this ties back into what you guys were talking about earlier with the US stuff kind of bloating, and this is where I didn't want to get into that yet. But I feel like it wasn't necessary. Yes, it advances the plot for certain things. It introduces us to Riri there. That way, when we get to Ironheart, the television show, we don't have to do an origin necessarily. We can do some flashbacks. We can skip out on a little bit of the character building because we've done it now. We've introduced her. We know some things about her already. I just don't know if it was needed. You know, there were so many great things that were going on that if you had cut that part out of it, you could have probably still restitched it without those pieces to still be a great movie. I'm not mad about it because, like I said, I think Dominique Thorne
She's did great.
A great job. I thought that the scene in the like in her dorm room, like which like all of the interactions with Okoye and Shuri, and I thought those were all fantastic. But it's to me, it felt like it was something that wasn't 100% necessary in this film with so much else going on.
But
I agree with that. Okay. Yeah, like everything the actors did on screen was good. The acting was amazing. I just didn't necessarily need all the story beats that happened.
Yeah. So here we go. I'm to this point that I have been waiting for months. So I absolutely agree with both of you. And 90% of the time when that happens in a Marvel movie and they're just kind of like, we have to put this stuff in for the other projects, it felt disjointed because of that. However, I will say the one difference, and here's where I go off the rails. This movie made me excited for all of their spy stuff. Because they've got the two main storylines. They've got the multiverse stuff going on, and then they've got kind of the spy stuff that was picked up in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So we got to look at the players now. In the United States, we've got Val. We've got, clearly she's putting together a team. She's trying to get Avengers assassinated. She is stealing technology, or she's buying technology off university professors. because Riri's scanner was a school project that she did. And somehow it ended up in the hands of the government. And then on top of that, now I have to pull on another thread that I've been that ticked a box a long time ago. Miss Marvel, Kamala's best friend, got picked up by MIT on his scanning technology. So specifically his biological scanning stuff and his software engineering, because remember he made that home version of like an Amazon Alexa. So you've got now we've established that the government will take technology from wherever they can get it. And unbeknownst to all of everybody in the government, which I don't think it's unbeknownst, but we've got the power broker skulking about in there. So these are the people you've got. I know Ross is worming around in there somewhere too for the Thunderbolts team. You've got Zemo that is now at the raft, ready to be picked up by whoever wants to use him for things. So you've got all of those players, and then on that, you've got a new Captain America, a new Falcons coming, you've got U.S. Agent, you've got all of these players in the mix, and it's a powder keg. Like, it's 100%. There is, like, I'm excited for Captain America New World Order. This movie got me beyond excited for Captain America New World Order, because I think that's the movie where all of this is going to come to head. And then we've got Secret Wars. So now we got to figure out who's a fucking Skrull on top of all this. So I will
Secret
say
Secret Invasion that, before that.
Secret Invasion. That's it. That's what I meant. So we got Secret Invasion. So some of these people could be Skrulls. So the Ross, who they saved from going to prison, he could be a Skrull and in fucking Wakanda. So everybody's about to have problems. And this movie kind of set things up in a way that I actually didn't mind the bloat for the first time. For the very first time in a Marvel movie where I obviously see this chunk that they could have just not had, I was like, I appreciate that chunk. I like it. I appreciate it. I'm a just, you know, and like I said, not a bad complaint to have, but yeah, no, as America's about to be a massive problem, but this movie got me excited for so many more projects than like, all the multiverse stuff. Like, I'm more excited now for New World Order and everything that's about to happen there. And Armor Wars.
Sure. And the big thing with that, to your point, is it wasn't a scene that they added in. It wasn't Thor taking a bath with Eric Selvig to have a dream about space rocks. Like, that was shot afterwards. That was like, we're going to add this in because we need to tell a story later down the line. This was woven through, and there was like it played into the overall story for sure. So it did a better job. This film did a better job bringing in something that's feeding into the larger universe. It wasn't a post-credit scene. It wasn't this one piece. They went through and it tied into so many parts of it. Mm-hmm. You know, Ross and Val's relationship, the, you know, everything at MIT. And the other part, and this is going to sound really weird, but I kind of I'm a little sad that they aged up Riri. Part of what makes Riri so unique in the comics is that she is younger. She's like 14 in the comics.
Yeah.
Again, it sounds weird, not mentioned that way at all. But to make her like a 19-year-old, it changes up the dynamic a little bit. I know that they're kind of aging everybody into a better, more in line age range as you start kind of building the Young Avengers, because we know that's what's coming. We know that they're whether it's in the next couple of years, whether it's in the next 5 to 10 years, you have stature, you have Ironheart.
They introduced a kid version of Loki skulking about somewhere. Yeah, exactly. I mean, honestly, the only one they don't
Wicked
have
and Speed.
They've introduced Wicked and Speed. The only one they don't have, I think, is Prodigy and whoever the new Captain Marvel, there's a Captain Marvel, a younger He just takes over the moniker, but he's a Kree.
Even if you go earlier than that, like, we don't have Iron Lad, but yeah. Iron Lad is a Kang variant. Yes. So, like, there's all these things that are kind of in this overall grand scheme of it. So they did a great job. It did not make the film bad by any stretch of the imagination. But if I were to say this part worked the least for me, if you were to remove that, I still think it would seal up into a great story of grief, of trying to defend your people, do right by your people in the same way. Like you said it before, Shuri and Namor are they're not different. They are two sides of the same coin. They want the same thing at the end of the day. And it's so hard for me to say Namor instead of Namor. And that's not even, those are the people that are his enemies call him Namor. Because I know that they refer to him as Kuku Klan, because that's the god name. But I want to say that there's actually also another name that he goes by. And I cannot think of it off the top of my head.
There was a name his mother named him, and I think they mention it in passing because.
He introduces himself to Ramonda and Shuri by that name.
Yeah,
because then that's where the whole piece of like the his enemies refer to him as Namor, you know, the one without love, like, which is a whole weird but interesting take on the character because you know he's an Atlantean, he's the first mutant, it's this whole thing, it's like, yeah,
and it's
it was very interesting take.
And this will be my last wild crazy take or wild thing. He is going to they're all gonna die, his entire kingdom's gonna die. And you know why they're gonna die? Because he's a mutant. And you know how they're gonna find his kingdom is because somebody's going to create the technology to find mutants, and somebody's going to be like, hey, there's a mutant at the bottom of the ocean. And then they're going to be like, oh, hey, there's vibranium here. And it's...
Well, I've saw like some articles speculating that Thunderbolts could be the movie that sets up mutants in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
And crazy speculation will start tying your strings together. You were talking about how Val and the US government are getting all of this equipment together, and Ms. Marvel, we had scanning technology that picked up a mutation in Kamala.
Mm-hmm.
It could tie all of that together and, you know, kind of start to find these blips on this radar of like, oh, there's mutants, and what is this anomaly that we're seeing on the scanner? So
and then you'll have the perfect opportunity for the power broker to start collecting female mutants to try and harvest mutant growth hormone. So then you'll have a drug out there that gives people random superpowers. So there's a lot. I mean, I don't think it'll be that obvious, but it's definitely setting up. There are a lot of... I haven't been this excited about them setting up things in a while. So, no, I was definitely... The moment Riri was like, I made that scanner on a dare. Like, what do you mean they have my scanner? How did you get my scanner? Like, the moment that happened, I was like, oh, no. Oh, Val, you're... And then when Ross was just like, do you really think we need vibranium? And she's like, I want all of it. I think we should have all... Like, her just being... She's saying the quiet part out loud. And I'm just like, oh, no. Everybody's about to have a bad time. So... And America's gonna kick it off. So I honestly can't wait to see how all this shakes out. Like I said, it's set up a lot, and I'm a little bit terrified of Guardians 3, because if this one made me cry and grief has been the big bad this whole time, it's not going to end well.
Well, technically, we're out of phase 4, aren't we?
I think
Guardians is phase 5. So technically, grief isn't part of... Isn't necessarily the theme.
Maybe it's their cousin Tragedy. I don't know. But I'm Marvel. Marvel has me on emotional guard again. It brought it up with WandaVision and Spider-Man No Way Home, and now I'm like, getting to a safe spot, and I'm like, no, my soul's gone back into the pocket dimension. I'm not bringing it out. I'm not bringing it back out. I will sit there stony face.
No, for sure. But I mean, and you're definitely right, because I mean, I know that Rocket's life and being experimented on by the High Evolutionary, like, that's a major part of the film. And yeah, it's it's gonna be one that's gonna want to tug on the heartstrings again. But before we start getting ready to wrap this up and wild speculation and all that, Aneka and Okoye, like the two of them cohabitating by the end of the film, like, that was adorable. And we don't always get to see a lot of that soft, warm side of Okoye. So yeah, to see that in the film.
No, it was like, Aneko and Ayo.
Yeah, it was
Aneko and Ayo. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. My apologies.
Because Okoye is married to the River what's Tribesman. His name
yeah.
from Get Out.
Wakabi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Listen, for a second, I just thought that she left him. He's in jail.
Yeah.
She got to keep the war rhinos and found herself a new love. No. You're right. My apologies. Ayo and Aneka, which wasn't a lot, but again, there are pieces. And to see things like this where it's just a part of their being and who they are, and to see that, you know, the kiss on the head, like, it's so, like, I love it. Like, it was great to see. And you know, BJ can speak to this obviously better than I can, but when it is such a film that is so centered on the culture and blackness and just being that person, the black community has a lot of times it's very difficult to incorporate those types of displays of affection, those types of being. So to see a world, a country, an environment where that's who they are, and that's a piece of it. It was phenomenal to see. It's great.
Yeah.
So let's, I know you've thrown out some wild conjecture, but are there any other wild speculations or where you see things going that you have not brought up yet, BJ?
One thing I'm going to find absolutely hilarious is the fact that Shuri, since she is no longer, she's not taking up the mantle of queen, and it looks like M'Baku will be king of Wakanda, which honestly is the best thing for the country, because everybody, Namor said, everybody's going to come after Wakanda. Everybody's going to blame them for everything. Everybody's going to come after them. And M'Baku is more than willing to be like, yeah, I want them to. So I think what's going to wind up happening is that Shuri will do what T'Challa did, and she's going to travel. She's met her nephew. She's realized her family is bigger than she thought it was. She's more supported. She's not alone. But I think she's also like Killmonger. She's going to keep an eye on people. And if she's not a sanctioned ruler of a country, she's pretty much free to act up all the fuck she wants. So I think all the other countries are going to have an even worse time than when Ramonda was like, here's your men. Try this again and see how it works out for you. I think countries will come for Wakanda, but they're going to have a very, very bad time, which is going to push them further in trying to gain more technology and power to try and rival Wakanda. So, like I said, I think that's definitely is going to be interesting, and that's something that's definitely going to happen.
And I didn't mention this before. My only other part that I didn't love, I get it because we're on a time constraint, but I felt like Shuri's process through grief and her acceptance and her coming to terms happened really quickly.
Yeah.
I know that there can be breakthroughs like that, but they had her spend so much of the film grieving, kind of pushing everybody away, being closed off, and then it was like all of a sudden, okay, now she's gonna let Namor live. Like, it just felt very rushed. I almost would have liked to see her kind of step away from it and step away from being the Black Panther at that point and just being like needing to process and grieve. And I guess we kind of get, she doesn't step away from it, but we start to see that with her going to see, you know, her, the nephew she didn't know that she had. And then we get the, you know, Rihanna's Lift Me Up to All Cry To at the end of it when she sits on the beach. You know, it felt a little rushed in a film that explored so much. It felt like that turn just was a little too quick for me. That was the only other piece that I wanted to bring up and kind of throw out there as well. I don't really have any wild speculation on this one. We've touched on kind of the things that I know about and I can think of, but I am excited to see what they do with all of this. It definitely was a film that made me want to see more for sure. Eric, any wild speculation or conjecture from you on either the Black Panther universe or the MCU as a whole?
No, I can't think of anything. I was gonna maybe throw out that maybe Kang's origin could have come he was a Wakandan, but after, and I guess it still could be, but after seeing Ant-Man, the after credits for Ant-Man, I would say no. But yeah, that would be interesting. If
would be, and especially because, oh God, I can't, I want to call it like intergalactic Wakanda, but I know that's not what it is. There was a series where Wakanda like sets up a space colony. So yeah. There are things that you could try to like tie in with that. And technically, I mean, these are variants of Kang. Because, you know, we have Rama Tut, who's apparently going to be introduced into the MCU officially, not just an Easter egg on the back of somebody's jacket in Moon Knight. So there are some things that are coming along the way. But yeah,
I like, mean, that I've could seen be him. Something.
Yeah.
I've seen him.
Wait, who, what?
You haven't seen Quantumania yet, have you?
He did, yeah. Was Rama Tut in the stadium?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was walking around was with the he? Other two. Yeah.
Yeah, he was one of the ones talking.
Was he? Shows you how much that movie stuck with me. Wasn't my favorite. Just throw that review in here at the end of the Black Panther microsode. It was okay. I didn't love it, though. And I'm still mad that they killed Kang the Conqueror. The fuck? Like, I know there's other variants. I get that. But how do you kill Kang?
Well, not technically, because that other post credit scene. Yeah. So that the one that was talking at the World's Fair thing, that is actually a moniker that the Conqueror goes by. So he may have actually been able to get out. He's just further back in time and can't do anything. He lost all of his technology and everything. So he's trying to get help. So that's...
I mean, these are all monikers that Kang has gone by.
Like, yeah. So I mean, but specifically the Conqueror, the one that they dealt with, I believe that was actually him. That was actually that one.
I'm gonna have to go to the New Rockstars YouTube channel and have Eric Voss explain to me the post credit scene.
It could also be where if Loki encounters the Conqueror, like obviously happened at the end of the end credit scene, that could have been before he became the Conqueror.
Uh-huh.
And Loki and what's his name, Owen,
Morbius?
Do something to Mobius? Branch off a off a path that he doesn't get stuck in the quantum realm. And so you still have the Conqueror out there.
Well, the thing is, they're in a different, their entire timeline got shifted because of Sophie killing He Who Remains. Because when they went back to the TVA, that was all now Kangified. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. They have a lot of balls in the air. And obviously, we know that we've got Secret Wars, we've got the Kang Dynasty, we've got all of this stuff. So it's not like they're going to try to wrap this up in a film. So hopefully, so far they've done a good job at telling these long form stories. So I'll keep the faith and keep seeing these movies, and we'll see what happens. All right, before we wrap this up, thank you to everybody listening. We appreciate your support and listening to us ramble on for hours on end about nerdy, geeky pop culture stuff. Especially when I start talking about things like, A Million Little Things, which is in the middle of its final season, and I'm still loving it. But anyway, we appreciate you. Check out our website, flameonshow.com. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/flameonshow. And we thank you so much for your support. All right, boys, before we go, let's get flame ratings for Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Eric, let's start with you.
I'm trying to remember what I gave Black Panther.
That was how many years ago now? Almost 5 years ago?
I guess I'll give it a 4.25. Still really, really good. But I prefer the first one to this one.
Understandable. I will also give it 4.25. I was going to give it 4.5, but I don't know. I think I will say 4.25, but know in my heart that it fluctuates somewhere between 4.25 and 4.5. And saving him for the end because he has led us in so much of this discussion and this conversation today. BJ, what is your flame rating for Black Panther Wakanda Forever?
5 out of 5, baby.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, I'm glad that we finally got to talk about this. Brian said that he loved the music. that was one of his big takeaways. One thing that we didn't really talk about all that much. He was going to be on this recording with us, but had something come up and was not able to make it. So I wanted to at least interject some of his thought into that as well. But we appreciate you all listening. I appreciate you guys talking Black Panther with me. And we will be back in 2 weeks with another pop culture roundup. So until next time, bye, bitches.
Bye.